Republicans and Democrats on the five-member Federal Communication Commission have been at odds for years now over the net neutrality issue. Now that Chairman Ajit Pai and his fellow two Republicans have reversed the net neutrality policy of the Obama administration, there's a job to do. Joining me with more, Republican Commissioner Brendan Carr. Mr. Carr, good to have you on.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
First of all, what are relations like at the human level? I mean, I was reading today that Commissioner Rosenworcel put out a statement that was pretty rough on her fellow commissioners with respect to this issue. Do you all speak to each other? Are you on cordial terms at a personal level?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, look, at the end of the day, you know, something around 90%+ of what we do at the FCC is unanimous, is bipartisan. You know, there's a handful of items, they tend to be the one that get the most public attention, that are really contentious, that are sometimes go down on partisan lines. But I think we make those decisions, we cast those votes, and then the next day we all come to the office and see, you know, where can we find common ground on the next issue. So I don't think there's any sort of lasting impact. This was a tough battle, strong opinions on both sides, but we continue to talk to each other and see where we can work together.
I guess it must be disappointing that those that disagreed with this issue made it kind of personal, and Commissioner Pai and his house and his family and so forth. Is most of that seemingly behind us at this point?
I think to some extent, yeah. I mean, look, this is an issue where people feel very passionate about it. It's the intersection of government and the internet. At the same time, you know, I do think that some of the rhetoric went a bit too far, really more than a bit too far. And it ended up, I think, giving cover for a lot of what we saw. There's been, you know, death threats against the chairman. There's been people, you know, protesting at his house. That's not to say there's not plenty of room for reasoned debate, for reasonable disagreement. I just think some of the sky is falling rhetoric went a little bit too far in this particular case.
Now, the policy was not all that old to begin with. How far along was the rulemaking for net neutrality before this reversal vote?
Yeah, so in 2015, the FCC adopted the Title II order, which classified the internet under Title II, in other words, treated it similar to a public utility. What the FCC did recently in our order that we publicly released on Thursday of this week, it reversed that 2015 decision. So we're going back to the same regulatory classification of the internet that existed in 2015 and for the 20 years before that. And during that time, under that regime, consumers obviously were protected. The internet was free and open. So it's simply returning to that same regulatory framework.
But had there been any documentation that had been established or formal rulemaking in process that has to be just tossed out at this point?
Yeah, so the 2015 decision was a final decision. It was appealed to the D.C. Circuit, which upheld it. And then in April of this year, we launched this new proceeding, which launched the new rulemaking to reverse that 2015 decision. And the order we just released yesterday was the culmination of that new rulemaking proceeding. And so now our job is complete. That 2015 decision has been overturned. There's some procedural steps left, meaning we need to publish this decision in the Federal Register, which could take a couple weeks. And there's a what's called a Paperwork Reduction Act analysis that the Office of Management and Budget does. So it's going to be another couple weeks or months before this decision takes effect. But in terms of the FCC's approach, our rulemaking is essentially over at this point.
So that means the staff then doesn't have a whole lot to do on this particular issue at this point.
That's right. Our work on this particular issue is largely over. We do have a full docket on other issues, not nearly as controversial as this one, but yes.
And I want to get to those, but I wanted to ask about the public commentary that came in on the latest issue, the latest vote that was taken, that was initiated by Chairman Pai. And there were, I guess, millions, many of them machine-generated from both sides of the issue, many of them coming in identically, you know, the same text, looked like bots sent them. How were commissioners, how did you go about trying to understand what people were really saying about this issue?
Yeah, look, people filed millions of comments in this proceeding. You know, I'm aware of, you know, claims about whether they're bots or otherwise. At the end of the day, what our obligation as commissioners is to look at the record, identify all the significant issues that people are raising, and work our way through those significant issues and make our cuts one way or the other. You know, and that's the process that we filed and followed in this case. It's the same process the commission followed in 2015 as well.
We're speaking with FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr. And what are some of the other topics coming up now that this thing is out of the way? It seems like there's blue sky a little bit for the commission.
Yeah, so what I'm really excited about is the role that we have to play in what we call broadband infrastructure deployment, particularly on the wireless side. A lot of listeners are probably familiar with 4G or LTE service, and we're starting the transition to 5G, which is going to be even faster wireless broadband service. But there's work we have to do with the FCC to streamline some of the regulations that apply to the deployment of the antennas and other infrastructure needed for wireless. And we need to make sure that our rules in that respect are 5G ready so that our rules don't end up holding back these new deployments.
Yeah, because the LTE 4G ain't all that fast from what I've been able to see on my phone. And so as the 5G comes in, can the towers that we all are all familiar with, including the ones that look like faked up to look like trees, are those the same infrastructure that will be used for the 5G signals?
In part, but it's actually going to be a very different infrastructure. So right now we have relatively few antenna sites out there, about 300,000 in the country. To support 5G, we have to do what they call densify the network, which means to deploy about a million new small cells. So we're going, again, from relatively few, 300,000, to over a million antenna sites, but they'll be smaller than what you see right now in terms of the macros. So that's why we need to make sure our regulatory structure is able to support and process that massive increase in antenna deployments that we need to support 5G.
Because a few years ago, I read about these small, several inches by several inches type of cube antenna apparatus that could go on buildings almost invisible throughout the country. And does rulemaking, is it required to support the installation of thousands or, as you say, millions of those?
Yeah, that's right. So you see these new small cells could be the size of a pizza box or a shoebox. And so we need to get, you know, potentially millions of those deployed across the country. The timelines, the regulatory review process that took place for what you see, you know, those big macro towers. It worked for those macro towers because you had relatively few of them. But that same process will threaten to slow down the deployment of small cells if you have to apply that same process to each small cell. So we have an open proceeding about how we can streamline that process. It's both federal law as well as state and local law that we need to address.
And I had another question on an initiative I'd read about several years ago, and this is something I'm personally interested in, the AM revitalization effort. I think Commissioner Wheeler had launched that one, or maybe it predated him.
Yeah, this is one that then Commissioner Pai, now Chairman Pai, actually took the lead on. He's been looking at a number of technical and other changes that can be made to revitalize the AM band and make sure that consumers can still get good signals over AM radio.
So what can happen there? What can be done there?
That's something that the chairman's office is still looking at, and how we can provide, you know, technical and otherwise regulatory relief to these AM stations so they can continue to serve the communities that they're in right now.
Now, NASA and the FAA are involved in a lot of the issues surrounding unmanned aircraft. And I guess if you take the unmanned aircraft industry and add to it the autonomous vehicle industry, there's a lot of radio frequency requirements for those particular things. Is the FCC involved there?
Yeah, we have a limited role there, but an important one, and that's on the spectrum side. So we need to make sure, whether it's for drones or autonomous vehicles or the Internet of Things, that we have the spectrum out there that all of these devices need to communicate. And we have a number of proceedings ongoing right now. We're looking to find new spectrum that we can push into the marketplace. Because as you know from your experience, as your listeners know, you know, the demand for connectivity is only, you know, exploding right now with video, not to mention obviously these Internet of Things and drone uses.
I guess my final question then would be, whatever happened to these spectrum auctions? Those were pretty busy over, you know, they came in waves over the past 20 or so years. What are the future plans for auctioning off of the spectrum that's not used so much?
Yeah, so we have a proceeding ongoing where we're identifying different spectrum bands, and we've done that. And we're now at the FCC doing the hard work of identifying, you know, which band do we want to put up for auction next. We completed an auction not too long ago for what's called 600 megahertz spectrum, or spectrum that the TV broadcasters used to use. And hopefully we'll be turning to some more spectrum bands to push those out in the marketplace through auctions in the not-too-distant future.
Because some of those auctions weren't all that successful in terms of the revenue they yielded. And do you think they're more valuable now?
Yes and no. So we had an auction that raised about $46 billion a year or two ago. Our incentive auction, the most recent one, raised a little bit less. But they're doing really well. I mean, there's demand for the spectrum. And I think, you know, our goal at the FCC is, regardless of the ultimate valuation that the market puts on it, our job is, you know, let's just keep churning that spectrum out there and making sure it gets into the commercial marketplace where innovators can continue to use it for great new inventions.
And just to return one more time to the net neutrality question, a lot of people saw this in terms of, well, would it be Silicon Valley and Google and Facebook and the rest of them on one side and the carriers and their multi-billion dollar investments in infrastructure on the other side? Have you had much feedback from those two purported battling giants over this recent decision?
Yeah, I think when you get to the headline level, a lot of people try to bucket people into big picture camps. But the reality is, you know, the perspectives on this were really across the spectrum. You had, you know, West Coast companies that supported it and vice versa. And I think at the end of the day, every actor in the internet space, whether it's ISPs, broadband providers, content providers, edge providers like Facebook and Google, they're all really going to benefit from this decision, in part because what we're hopefully going to see is an increase in investment in our broadband infrastructure, because we have to get a massive new investment in our broadband networks to get where we want to go in terms of 5G and otherwise making sure that everyone, no matter where they live in the country, has access to high-speed internet service.
FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.